Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Women are dying every day across the world, and when they die, their children are more likely to die within 2 years of the mother's death, tenfold increase in the risk of death. Women also are contributing to their countries, contributing to their communities and the economy, and are playing key roles in a variety of areas to sustain families and communities. And there is an organization that is committed to reducing maternal deaths and child deaths too, across the globe, in recognition of what women are contributing to the health of our world. And that organization is known as JPIGO. And here to talk with me about this organization and its work is the president and CEO of JPIGO, Dr. Leslie Mancuso, a registered nurse who has long been involved in global health. And Leslie, thank you so much for joining us on Health Styles today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful.
Tell us a little bit, give us a little background about JPIGO. How did it form and what is it doing today?
Well, it's now we're celebrating our 40th year anniversary this year. So for 40 years, JPIGO has worked in more than 150 countries. Our focus has always been around preventing the needless death of women and their families. Right now, as I'm sitting here, we have more than 1,500 nurses, nurse midwives, doctors, and other health providers working in 50 countries around the world.
And where does your support come from?
We have been so privileged to have support coming from many areas. The U.S. government, USAID, CDC, and DOD have been very big supporters. But we've also had incredible support from the foundation sectors like Gates, as well as many corporations such as Merck and Exxon and Chevron and others. So, and we also have support for nursing coming from the Norwegian government and the UK government. So we feel very privileged to have so many people believing in our work.
I should let listeners know that we're recording this in Melbourne, Australia, at the International Council of Nurses meeting on May 20th, where today you were the plenary speaker, speaking about the issue of women. We know the saying, women hold up half the sky, but indeed you were saying women hold up more than half the sky. So your message today was to mostly nurses, but the message was a message that our whole community needs to know about. And that message is that women are crucial and that we have to do more to prevent their deaths.
Absolutely.
Give us some reasons why preventing their death, other than just because we don't want women to die, but what impact it has on families and on communities.
Well, if you look at, if a mother dies, and you just cited that the likelihood of a child dying before the age of two is 10 times greater. But the other side of that is if a mother lives, we know that that mother will focus on bringing nutrition to that family, will focus on having those children immunized. If a mother lives, she is more focused on ensuring those children go to school. And therefore, if those children are going to school, those children become productive citizens of those countries. And that human capital that's educated can very much ensure countries are more politically stable, more economically sound. So when a mother dies, it's not just about her physical death, it's about the impact on the countries and the world at large.
When you presented this morning, one of the immediate reactions I had initially, as you were leading off your presentation, was, well, okay, so we prevent the death of women, but under what circumstances are they living? And I wasn't convinced that an organization that was dedicated to reducing maternal deaths was the right focus, that shouldn't we be talking about the conditions of their lives, which you do. But you made a really compelling case and this for focusing on reducing those deaths. And I shared the statistic when I opened the program about that when a mother dies, their children are more likely, are 10 times more likely to die within 2 years mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. woman's death.
Mm-hmm.
And that was stunning to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, because what you're doing, I think, if we're going to look at the world being stable and politically, economically, socially, when a mother dies, it not only hurts that child, but it disrupts the family. And when a mother dies, that family no longer is intact. That child is put in positions that we wouldn't want any child to be put in, and many of them die. And so without an intact family, obviously that influences the communities at large, which influences the stability of countries at large, which blossoms into our world at large. So, you know, it is important that we don't have women dying. It is important that they're not dying of HIV/AIDS. It is important that they're not dying of cervical cancer or tuberculosis or anything else. But we have to see that there's a direct relationship between a woman and the family and the country and the world. It's not simply a personal tragedy. It's a tragedy for our world. And it doesn't need to take place. That's the most important. We actually know how to save mothers' lives.
How do you save mothers' lives? What are you doing to save mothers'
lives?
Well,
first and foremost, our goals are always, JPIGO's goals are always around building the capacity of countries to do for themselves. So our goals are helping countries help their nurses, their midwives, their doctors to care for these mothers with the evidence that we know works. We know the number one reason women die is due to bleeding to death in the world. We actually
bleeding to death when they're delivering a baby.
When they're delivering a baby or after. We actually, it's really, we know what to do about it. We know what to do with postpartum hemorrhage. And that's what it's called after, you know, after they deliver the hemp. And so there's many tools we have to do to prevent them from bleeding. With medicines called misoprostol, which we're using in very low-resource countries of the world, like Afghanistan and Indonesia, countries in the world where women have limited access to go to a facility. We know that having a skilled attendant, a skilled nurse that knows how to manage a woman during her labor and delivery will absolutely affect her survival. So there's actually a great deal of information that we have on how to manage a woman. We know that active management of the third stage of labor is critical. And if nurses and nurse midwives have those skills, that woman has a better chance of surviving. So it's a matter of having knowledge, having women there, and trying to ensure that wherever this woman lives, we get that care to that woman.
You also shared the story. Well, one of your other messages this morning was the importance of nurses to preventing women's deaths. And you gave the story of Nurse Rati Rani
yes.
in India.
Yes.
Share
yes.
that story. I thought it was a very interesting one.
This is, you know, I think nurses have incredible potential to find solutions like Rati did. She's from northeastern India, was trained by JPIGO in family planning, particularly postpartum family planning. And Rati had a young woman come in who had already had 4 young children, Anita. And Anita came in ready, having her 5th child. And she came in for an antenatal visit. And Rati said to her, you know, you should child space. That'll help your health and the health of the newborn. And Anita said, I'm sorry, you know, I am tired. I have 4 young children. But my mother-in-law won't allow me to have contraception because she wants a son. So this nurse, you know, like all nurses, is from the community, knows the culture, knows the religion, knows that like other countries, quite often women live with the husband's family and the mother-in-law does have an opinion in her care. Invited that husband, mother-in-law in, talk to them about child spacing, the importance of spacing children, that she certainly could have other children when she chose to have them. But for her health and the baby's health, this is for child spacing. And when Rati delivered the baby, she had another girl. She and the family together chose to have an IUD, a postpartum IUD. So This was a nurse recognizing this woman, her body needed a rest. She needed to be able to get strong. Her children needed to grow a little. But she needed to make that decision with her family.
So you are training. One of your missions is to train healthcare workers locally.
Absolutely. Most of my staff, 80% of all the individuals that work with JPIGO are in the field. And many of them are from the countries. I have nurses as country directors. I have nurses as senior technical leaders. I have nurses in a variety of roles, as I do physicians and midwives. And so our work is about really helping them from their countries, these experts. There are many nursing experts around the world now in these countries, helping them teach others.
How many countries is JPIGO in?
We're now in over 50 countries. So.
And what are the major challenges that you face in trying to do this work of reducing the death of women in these countries?
Well, I think, it's not a challenge, but our work must go hand in hand with the governments and must go hand in hand with the local groups. So the first challenge is ensuring that you're working side by side with the goals of the Ministry of Health and the government, that you're working side by side with the nursing associations and the others, that you've included the schools of nursing and others that are right now educating nurses, and that you've included the local groups, the local NGOs, and the communities. So whenever you're looking at doing the type of programs we do, we're working with countries from the policy to the field so that we ensure that there are standards of practice that everyone in that country will be using, that there are standards that will be left behind that they will use forever in how to care for a woman with HIV/AIDS or care for a woman a woman that's pregnant. And we set up the systems. It's all about that health system and ensuring that the components are there, they're affordable, they can use them, and so we look at every aspect of the system. So to me, training is a small part because you must train, but they must have the resources and the systems, the policies, procedures to be able to do that program and have it be theirs, have it be sustainable.
So we know that the social determinants of health are strong influencers and factors in a woman's health as well as in women's death. Mm-hmm. To what extent do you focus on issues like safe water, like adequate housing, like education of women?
Mm-hmm. I think that, certainly JPIGO, as for what we do, works certainly with health, but those pieces come into it. When it comes to water, many of the facilities we work with do not have running water in it. So many times we're working with other NGOs, figuring out systems by which we bring water in a process so that the nurses can, in fact, wash their hands. We have a bucket system, and many times people see it and know that we've been there. We have buckets in a system that teaches them how to clean their supplies so that they're able to have clean devices. We keep an infection prevention. So there's that water comes into it for that reason anyways. But I think that any nonprofit in the world must say that none of us do this alone and that we quite often are working with other nonprofits and other nonprofits are doing and looking at their issues. Now, when it comes to some of our work in the slums, particularly the slums of Kenya, we are, in fact, working with a lot of NGOs because everything is so related, because you have the housing right there, the health right there, at the water right there. So, but the reality is none of us can do everything. And I think what's wonderful is that many NGOs like JPIGO work together in partnership with others. We must partner. We must partner, all of us, because there's too much work to be done.
Let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program, and we're talking today with Dr. Leslie Mancuso, a registered nurse and president and CEO of JPIGO, an international nonprofit health organization that's affiliated with Johns Hopkins University and is focused on reducing maternal deaths. And we might just say how to spell Jipaigo for those people who are wondering how you spell this word. How do we spell Jipaigo?
We spell it J-H-P-I-E-G-O.
Okay. And do you have a website?
We have a website, www.jipaigo.org.
Jipaigo.org. So again, that would be www.jhpiego.org.
Please go to our website. It's a wonderful website.
What's on your website?
Well, what I love is we have many languages. It gives you ideas of what our programs are in different countries. So you're able to understand if people have an interest in a certain country, they can see what we're doing in that country. We have new stories all the time. And Rati's story is one of many about incredible work being done by nurses and midwives and doctors. And I think that tells a better story of what's going on in the world and what, you know, what so many of these countries are capable of doing.
So I imagine that you are in countries where there is significant conflict and violence.
Mm-hmm.
Some NGOs pull out mm-hmm. when the violence, particularly during times of civil war, mm-hmm. but in other cases as well, where mm-hmm. the violence is just mm-hmm. threatening the workers.
Mm-hmm.
There are other NGOs that stay in mm-hmm. the region. Where mm-hmm. does your organization come in on this?
Well, we've been in Afghanistan now since the Taliban fell, and in fact, we've been the lead organization that's helped the government of Afghanistan set up schooling systems for midwives, mm-hmm. We call them community midwives, but whereby they're being brought from communities to a local school, taught, and they go back to their communities. There were only about 300 to 400 midwives when the Taliban fell because women weren't allowed to be educated during the Taliban. And so we came in and had to look at roles for nurses, roles for midwives, what needed to be done for women. And we have worked in all parts of Afghanistan and continue to work in Afghanistan. We've now trained more than 4,000 midwives alongside many other health workers. But more importantly, we've built their standards for practice, their job descriptions. We've helped them look at deployment and where more health workers were needed in the far reaches of that country. So, it's our feeling if we can do the type, we are not an emergency group.
Mm-hmm.
We are a group that is working to build the capacity of a country. So if we can work in that country, alongside, we're working in South Sudan, doing a lot of work there in family planning and maternal health with a program called MCHIP, which is a USAID-sponsored program. In fact, MCHIP is working in over 55 countries around the world, and we're the leader of that.
Mm.
We're the leader of the Global Award for USAID in maternal and child health. So, I would say we are in a variety of countries, but obviously, we are dictated by how the conditions of that country move and whether we're able to do the work. And certainly the U.S. government, if we're working with them, that weighs into whether, workers stay. But I'm very pleased with the type of work and the type of settings that Jipaigo works in.
How long have you been with Jipaigo?
This month, it's been 11 years.
Oh.
So I'm 11 years as the president and CEO.
So over this time,
mm-hmm.
one of the issues, of course, particularly with people like Hillary Clinton, who has
mm-hmm.
been advocating for women's rights and women's rights and women's equality,
mm-hmm.
there has been more attention that's been paid
mm-hmm.
to the issues of inequality in
mm-hmm.
many countries and
mm-hmm.
the second-class citizenship that
mm-hmm.
Status that many women have in some
mm-hmm.
particularly developing nations and some that are a little developed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering to what extent you are hopeful. Have you seen progress in your 11 years at Jipaigo
mm-hmm.
in women's standing in some of these, particularly developing countries?
Let's take a country like Afghanistan. You now have 4,000 women that are employed that previously didn't have jobs. I think when we look at some of the work we're doing now with the education of nurses, the education of midwives, that's giving women skills, that's giving them an income, that's giving them something they're contributing to their community and their country. So I think there's no doubt we need to continue to look at improving health, improving access. I think there's also, we all know, that women getting educated is a very important variable. And for all of us, we want that to occur. I think, I am hopeful, and I'm hopeful because I'm meeting these incredibly strong women when I go into these countries. I'm meeting women that are in the government. I'm meeting women that are in schools. I'm meeting women that are leading associations. And as we are there to support them in their roles, maybe it's just my determination and my optimism, but I believe that as these women are getting skills and as we're supporting them and as they're taking on new entrepreneurial roles in business, and we will continue to see women making progress. But I think this is an issue that we need to keep supporting, talking about, and advocating for. That's why this morning, one of my topics was, nurses advocating for women. I absolutely believe we have women, and we need to be advocating for all women around the world.
You made a couple other points that I thought were pretty interesting this morning and that had to do with the relationship between a woman's income and mm-hmm. what happens to that income in the family. You talked about that women operate most of the small businesses and farms in developing countries, which I had no idea about.
Yeah, people don't realize that women are one of their largest jobs off in these countries is the agricultural sector. But they're also very good entrepreneurs. They're in the markets. And so, when a woman dies, it is a tragedy personally, but it's also a cost. It's a cost to that community. The community loses both her paid labor or her unpaid labor. The country loses the contributions that woman can make both economically and socially. And it's a cost to a nation when a woman dies. And I think we need to remember that women now make up 40% of the global workforce, and this will only increase. And so we are an economic driver, and we need to be concerned that losing a woman, especially when we know what we need to do, whether they have, to prevent cervical cancer or to prevent them from getting malaria, or if we know what to do, it's a travesty that we're allowing women to die and not continuing to fight for those women.
I was also surprised at your point that women's income is more likely to be spent on food and medicine, education, and other family needs.
Yes, that's been known. In fact, in development, we've known that for years, mm-hmm. that you will absolutely see. And that's why what you see when a mother dies and a child is orphaned, you see that child then not going to school. Quite often that child no longer gets immunized, that child no longer has someone really thinking about nutrition. Women are playing an enormous role in our world today. And so it is a loss. It is a loss economically for that family. And I think that's something that we should be talking about. The greater, the important loss of not just a loss of a personal tragedy, but is a tragedy for the country and the world.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Health Styles today and for sharing this message and this important information with us. It's really important work that you're doing, and it's important work that we all need to contribute to, I believe. So thank you to Dr. Leslie Mancuso, a registered nurse and president and CEO of JAPIGO, an international nonprofit health organization that's affiliated with John Hopkins University. And one more time, that website, Leslie?
It's www.japigo.org.
www.jhpiego.org. jhpiego.org. Well, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you so much.
And for the listeners, thank you for tuning in today. You're listening to Health Styles, and we are brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers and moderators of this program. Thanks so much for tuning in.